Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Goalie Science, the podcast that bridges the gap between goaltending, science, and peak performance. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, a former professional goalie, currently pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy and specializing in goalie performance coaching. Joining me as always is Dr. Ben Cernik, a seasoned goalie coach and sports analytics specialist. Whether you find yourself at home, on the road, or at the rink, grab a cup of your favorite beverage and let's drop the puck on this week's episode.
Jamie.
Ben.
Tell the people why I hate you.
Because I care about this podcast. I care about the future of the podcast. And Ben obviously does not what we're trying to do is I'm trying to improve some of the video quality just for YouTube, for content, and just kind of continue to grow it. So I did make Ben set up his phone on a tripod to record instead of using Zoom's very compressed video footage. So if you are watching on YouTube, thank you. If you're listening on any of your podcast apps, go give us a watch on YouTube and let us know. And then tell Ben that he needs to care more about this pod.
It's first, my camera's not good enough, so I get a new camera. And then first, next, my phone's not good enough, so I get a new phone. It's an endless list of things.
No, it is. It is an endless list. Why do you think my backdrop isn't good enough? And I spent 7 hours making a logo, and I got to go get some LED light strips for it today because it never ends. But you know what? I care. I care about the goalies listening. Anyways, Ben, before we start, do you have anything other than me to complain about?
Yeah, I'm going to, it's a day and end that ends in Y, so let's complain about RVHs.
Okay, yeah,
RVHs. Let's get into it. No, I actually saw some takes on the Joseph Woll injury that were, you know, because of how he plays into his posts, he had made his ankles susceptible to the high ankle sprain. And I honestly, Jamie, I have never had my eyes roll farther into my skull than reading that.
What did we talk about last time? Where we talked about like understanding your lane, staying in it. And I get like, if you're a hockey writer, like everyone has their opinion. It's just, it is what it is. But also like some people's opinions carry more weight than others. And also if you know what you're talking about, it's important. That's again, it's like me watching a quarterback and he throws a pick and I try to break that down. I don't know anything about, I can barely throw a spiral. I'm pretty bad at football.
Yeah,
so
me too.
I watch that and I go, probably shouldn't have thrown it there, but I don't know. I don't know anything about this.
What do I know, right?
I don't know anything. So I'm not going to make a tweet talking about it. Unfortunate injury though. High ankle sprains.
Suck. Not terrible.
No bueno. They aren't good and they aren't great for goalies because the butterfly.
Really bad for goalies, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really unique position and I wish I had my anatomy skeleton, but it's at my parents' house.
You don't need an anatomy skeleton. Grow up.
I like to show the viewers who are watching on 4K and on YouTube now. Essentially, when you butterfly, it's a lot of ankle eversion. So the outside of your ankle rolls up, and that that motion combined with a little bit of dorsiflexion puts a lot of stress on the ankles. And yeah, it, you know, in the RVH, to people's opinions, the RVH does put a lot of stress on your ankles. Not, don't know if it's generally more than other positions, but it's one of those ones where when you're a goalie, kind of like everything isn't great. So when you have a high ankle sprain and you drop down the butterfly, you're getting a lot of force through that ankle and it is super painful. So I built upon Ben's pretty good tweet that he made and I put on Instagram where I said, like, general rule of thumb in physical therapy and recovery is, like, you're looking at like 4 to 6 weeks for the general population for high ankle sprain. I would like to extend that in goalies to about 6 to 10.
Yeah.
Not really the structurally, it's probably going to heal the same or faster. It's there's going to be a period of time when you're playing through pain, and that period of time is long. And
yeah,
so I'm actually dealing with this with one of my EGM goalies, who's not a high ankle sprain, but he's having ankle injuries. And I asked him, like, what's your pain, using the classic, like 10 scale. And he's like, I'm playing. It's like, when I use it in the RVH only, I'm at a 6 out of 10. I'm like, hey, that's a lot. So my goal with him is to get it and manage it so that he's playing with a 3 or 4 out of 10, something that he's going to be able to manage. And if it's just the RVH, he's going to be able, he's only in that position so many times a game where it's not that bad, but it's a pain management thing. And speaking anecdotally, I had a high ankle sprain right after I signed a professional contract, immediately blew up my ankle at training camp.
Nice.
And everyone was like, oh yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. So what I did is, after 3 weeks, every single Friday, after seeing our AT on our team at Tech, I went to, I put on my lower body. I did one butterfly.
And it just felt awful.
And it hurt so much. And every single week, and until week 8, was the first time that my pain was under probably a 7 out of 10. And then I was like, okay. So then I stayed on the ice for like 5 minutes. And then I had pain from, so that would have been training camp in, actually it would have been clear July. So I would have had pain from about July to January. Nice. I was playing my entire first part of my first pro season, I was playing through some degree of pain, and it's just an unfortunate injury. So all the best to Joseph Woll. If you're a Leafs fan, we are sorry. Don't expect him to be back right away. This is one of those ones that does take some time. So it is an unfortunate injury for him.
Yeah, I remember, same thing. I had that injury when I was 18, and honestly, really similar mechanism to what happened to Woll, where my skate got like pinned into the post and I just went over it. Like, so there's no room for my ankle to go. And I thought I had broken my leg. Like, that's what it feels like when you do it. Like,
you think
your leg is broken. Like, that's how much it hurts.
I've broken one bone in my body, is my pinky finger, which is why it's super crooked. But when I, so mine was, my mechanism of injury is I just caught my outside edge and I went over it.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
I remember it was at development camp with the Jets, and we were playing a scrimmage. And I remember I finished out the play and I got up and I kind of like pushed myself to the bench. And I told Mike Keane, two or three time Stanley Cup champion, I was like, hey, Keener, I think I just broke my ankle. And he goes, what? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I just broke my ankle. And then, so I like kind of pushed my way to the bench, and then I just like, I almost fainted. The pain was so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Jamie, do you remember when, so on that first butterfly, I remember, so I think most people I think any goalie who has a high ankle sprain and doesn't know this, like, you get, did you go boot? Did you have an air cast at all or no?
No, no cast, nothing. Like the crazy and the frustrating part was I could do everything except butterfly. I was squatting like heavy weights. I was pushing sleds, no problem. Dorsiflexion was fine. Soon as I did a butterfly, just take a knife and put it into my leg.
Yeah, I remember. So same thing. I remember mine was kind of gnarly. I actually was in an air cast for a couple of weeks, or a boot for a couple of weeks. But I get off of it, I feel great. I'm walking around, feels awesome. I skate, just skating around, like just tracksuit and skates, shuffling, T-push. I'm like, okay, feels a little weak, but like feels dynamite. And I was like, oh, it feels pretty good. Like, maybe I'm going to get back. And at the time, I'm like trying to get back for, I was in boarding school, so trying to get back for like a big Christmas tournament. And I put my lowers on the next day. And again, feel good. Like, I'm bouncing around, I'm T-pushing. I just go for a butterfly and I drop down and I just don't move. because I'm like, I just broke my leg. Like the first butterfly, probably same timelines, you about 3 weeks in, and you're like, oh my God, it is unbearably painful. Like the first with trying to butterfly with a high ankle sprain.
So, I know. And I, yeah. And like my swelling wasn't, well, it was, it's swell, the swelling was kind of bad originally. Mm-hmm. Actually, and you're going to lose your mind on this one. It's funny, but everyone's got their own opinion, but I had my AAT did some like, just like inflammation acupuncture, where it's just shoot as many needles as you can for 10 minutes. And it did a lot. And it got the blood flow down. And since then, I didn't have any inflammation and things were great. And I like I said, at like week three, I was like, oh, I'm back. I was not back.
You were not back.
I was very far from returning. And actually, yeah. I remember even when and it wasn't even after week eight, when I did my first butterfly, I went and golfed. And the rotary component, because I was like, oh, we're good. So I go to tee up a drive and I'm a lefty. So the leg that it was my lead leg and the one I turn on, I almost passed out. I almost passed out on the tee box. And then from there, I was like, I told the group I was playing with, I was like, I'm not going to hit anything off the tee. I'm just going to hit from someone's ball and I'm chipping and I'm not turning my foot.
Yeah. It's like, again, this is just the reality. Maybe this will be kind of the last part of the segment today on this, but
it's not, because I have something else to talk about ankles.
Oh, okay. Well, then the last point of this exact note is that it is a faster recovery to just straight up snap a bone in your leg.
Oh,
It is a way easier recovery to just break your leg, like your lower leg. So tibia or fibula.
It's better. If you have a broken high ankle sprain.
You want
a broken bone. What I was going to say is this, we are goalie science and we are rehab professionals, and
one of us is almost a rehab professional,
and one of us was licensed, but now
it's just hanging out right now.
I went through the education. For me, it's just now I just have to spend a certain amount of hours, and then the old governing board says, hey, you're qualified, even though I've been doing 100% caseload for the last 12 weeks. Ankle mobility is like really was hot. It comes in waves on the internet. It was hot for a little bit. It's definitely incredibly overrated for goalies. And I think the thing is too, is like, you know, because you'll go off ice and then you'll try to do like a lot of things, and hockey players and goalies admittedly have like usually very stiff ankles. And it's because our legs are locked into a boot for so long, and so we don't need the full range of motion. And I actually was talking to Trav for Oilers the other day, and he's like, how do I improve ankle range of motion? I was like, why? He's like, well, I need to be able to sit farther forward in dorsiflexion over my foot. And I'm like, I don't think you do. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, he's like, well, I wear the Kinects, I can get more range. I was like, possibly.
Sure. But
two things: gaining ankle range of motion is very hard and takes a very, very long time. Our Achilles and our calves do not want to be super mobile. So to get any meaningful range, you're looking at probably like a 3 to 6 month timeline for any significant improvements. And even then, your skate probably isn't going to let you use it. And I think that's where everyone gets like, because we had talked about UC Saros and his ankles, and that's just like a genetic thing. And the only way like having super flexible ankles and super strong and flexible ankles would be beneficial is if you're playing ultra wide, but you probably shouldn't be playing ultra wide.
Nope.
So, and that's the thing is like, he'll be like, how do I get my ankles are too stiff? I'm like, if they're limiting your ability, like off the ice training, you want to improve it, because just generally overall being healthy and moving well is important. But for goalies, ankle range of motion is very overrated. And honestly, if you look at like a lot of studies when it comes to like power and being explosive, usually stiffer ankles shows some correlation to more power. That's kind of you could debate that either way. But is the juice worth the squeeze for gaining ankle range of motion for goalies? Probably, almost definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, you just need like a base amount, right?
Yeah, and like
you need your standard.
You would know if you didn't have the requisite amount.
Yep, exactly.
You would know.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you're sometimes fighting against your own anatomy too, right? We're all different. There's no like, I wouldn't go out as far to say that you shouldn't spend time working on it if you want to work on it.
Yeah,
but it's at the same time, there's a priority list of what's going to be the most worth your time, and you're probably, again, if you want to work on ankle mobility, you know, do some lower body exercises where you spend some time deep in an ankle mobile range, right?
Just sit and squat for 5 minutes.
Yeah, squats, split squats, lunges, things that force the knee over the toe if you really want to work on it. But you don't need to, you know, don't need to get the bands out for 30 minutes and move your ankles around every day with them. Unless, again, unless you find
You want to.
Unless you want to. Yep.
Unless you want to. And if you feel better doing it, for sure. Yep, but just thing. Like from like the actual biomechanics standpoint of goalies and their ankles is like your foot's pretty darn locked, and players have a higher boot, so their feet are even more locked, why high ankle sprains are the most common sprains, because you're not going to get a low ankle sprain because that thing's really locked in. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think the other part of it is like the high ankle sprain is, it's a bit of a misnomer too, right? Because like, yes, it affects some aspects on the inside of the ankle, but what's really happening is your two bones are like splaying apart in the middle. Right.
It's so like you have it's, this. It's in your basically thinking you're outside your shin.
Yeah. Stop cutting me off. I was finishing that.
You stop cutting me off.
I don't. Okay. Yeah, the bones of your lower leg. Like again, there's a little bit of an issue on the medial side, the inside of the ankle. But most, and even I wrote that, and I was like, ooh, not entirely true. But it's the splaying of your two lower leg bones. You have this like connective tissue. A syndesmosis is what they call it.
Syndesmosis.
And every time your ankle goes, your foot goes towards your shin, that spreads your bones apart. And it's like basically you're re-tearing it over and over and over again. And that's why it feels so bad.
It hurts a lot. The last thing I'm going to say about ankles, and then we'll move into the scouting science, goalie science, is with that one goalie I was talking about, my junior goalie, she's dealing with it's from a broken talus that's kind of reoccurring. Mm. So it's a little different.
But he was saying, foot for those at home.
Yeah, but he was saying like, I wear Kinect so I can get more range of motion. And I was saying, I actually think we might even look at changing your skate and putting you in a stiffer boot, because if that's going to lock you in, especially if we can get some like athletic tape and ankle to get you in a wrap to reduce that range of motion that's causing that pain, that might be the case. So, that's why I do really love the fact that as much as I hate all the time and effort I spend into being a PT and the money and the miserable stuff and the Medicare cuts that are happening again. But anyways, I like being able to solve problems like this with that expertise. And that is something, you know, important. I do appreciate that. But Ben, originally, before we all went off and talked about ankles, I wish people could kind of see the group chat you and Booj and I have, because it would be really funny. But we were talking about scouting, and I think we're going to call it the science of scouting. That's probably what we're going to title this podcast.
Are you making the titles now?
I don't know. Well, I actually always make the titles. Then sometimes our titles are not the same at all. We never are on the same page. I just make one, and then it just is what it is. But the science of scouting, and Ben, you are in charge. You are more heavily involved in scouting than I am. I do scout for certain junior teams. I did scout for Michigan Tech for some time, and occasionally other teams at various levels will ask me to evaluate certain goalies. This is going from the pro all the way down to minor hockey. So it is very different. But Ben, this is a topic I know you're very passionate about, so I would like you to take the lead. And for the goalies and parents listening, I think we're going to try to talk about like the realities of it, and like what you should and shouldn't do. And then how much does like just scouts and the scouts are here, how much does it actually really matter and influence your overall growth, development, and then long-term, you know, pursuits as a goalie? So Ben, take us away.
Jamie, I think this is an awesome question, and I think we'll find some answers to it after the break.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, we're back. Let's talk about scouting, Jamie. So I think the first thing that is worth noting is that not every team has a goalie person on staff. And this is especially true at lower levels, whether it is minor hockey. And let's like be aware that I don't think anyone is for a minor team. I don't think we can call really anyone a scout per se. I think we just have coaches who are watching players. But when we get even into like the junior levels, right, there's not always a goalie person on staff. And there's not always a goalie person working with the staff. And that can be at a lot of different junior levels, right? So if we think of like, if we think, look at something like the CHL, every team has a goalie coach, right? But their involvement with the scouting department ranges pretty significantly. Yeah. I know some coaches who are heavily involved in the scouting process, but whereas they would actually go and watch stuff. I know other coaches who would give kind of like a checklist for scouts to look at. And then yeah. I know some teams who had their goalie coach completely uninvolved in the process.
Yeah.
Now, that's probably surprising to some people, but Jamie, that's pretty much the reality of it first off the bat. Like,
yeah, it's
surprised to see.
Yeah, there's very little scout, like designated goalie scouts. That's typically arranged for basically the NHL. I mean, that person at the NHL is in charge of, evaluating their American League ones. But even then, that goalie person isn't doing the scouting themselves. It's oftentimes a coach who says, hey, I saw this goalie. Let me know what you think. In the minor hockey systems, it's if there is a contracted goalie coach, so somebody who coaches privately, runs their own business in their coaching school, that sometimes they'll be brought in for tryout situations and that's it. Their job is to evaluate the goalies on the ice or someone will send them a clip of this. Okay, here we go. But people aren't like, I don't even know of any goalie coaches who are going out actively only scouting goalies. It doesn't happen. Even when I was recruited to Michigan Tech, it was our assistant coach who knows nothing about goaltending. And he said that he's like, I don't know anything about goalies, but I think he's like, I like what you do.
Yeah.
Here's my card. And so that's important to remember that when you get scouted, because we're talking about when you get to the age where scouting actually becomes somewhat important, I can almost guarantee a goalie coach is not the one finding you. It's going to be like someone who doesn't know anything. And all they're just looking at is they're just being like, I think this guy or girl looks like a goalie. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, again, we can complain about all the things that goalies lack, but it's just, there's not a lot of us. And there's not a lot of us that kind of know what we're doing, what we're looking for. So it just doesn't make sense to have someone, a full-time person to do this all the time. The money just isn't there.
Yeah. Like I think one of the first realities, and this is, I don't agree with this, but it is how it is that your general optics, like we talked about robotic goalies last week, but your general optics to look like a goalie. And again, I'm saying not your ability to stop the puck at all,
yeah.
but your ability to look like the kind of goalie people associate with as being elite goalies. Like the amount of times I have people say like, oh, I think this goalie plays just like Carey Price. And that's sure. I probably don't. They don't at all. But that's okay. That is really important when you have people who are not goalie people scouting, right? So I think a story for that is
that's your foot in the door.
Yeah, a goalie that I worked with last year is playing Division I hockey now, but they were they're an excellent goalie, like super 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 good, and they did not get offers basically the entire year, and they were super frustrated from it. And they were like undoubtedly a Division I caliber goalie. This wasn't even really a debate. Like they were going to find a D1 spot. They did. Right. But they had a bunch of people who they were better than committing and getting offers, which I think is a common experience for lots of people who are playing juniors. You know, why is this person who I'm better than getting an offer I'm not going to get? And part of their problem, in all honesty, is they didn't look like the typical prototype of what people think goaltending is. They were technically super proficient, super efficient, excellent puck trackers, great skater, but you know, they weren't wearing Bauer mocks, so you couldn't hear them butterfly from 800 feet away. You know what I mean? Like, just like the crisp looking stuff, like just looking crisp. Like, they didn't look crisp when they made saves. They made saves controlled and excellently. They didn't look crisp, so they didn't get offers. Yeah. It was silly, really.
I'm laughing at this because, like, it's so true. And if you're a goalie coach listening, and you're going to be like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And then, if you're a goalie parent too, you might have experienced this as well. But it's just, especially when we're talking about minor hockey aside, so we're talking about into junior and college and pro, that scouting and recruiting is based off of potential, most likely. It's not as heavily put into what are they doing right now. It's like, I see this goalie being somewhere, you know, or I can see them being this in the future. So that's what they're looking off of. And it's like, do they look like a goalie? Do they look like some sort of NHL goalie that I've seen before? Like, and then that's what most will take into consideration. And then from seeing it and like being scouted from other teams when I was younger and all these things, is it's like, do you look like a goalie? And I definitely didn't. So I don't know how I even made it, but do they look like a goalie? And then we'll talk about stats. Then it's like, are their stats okay?
Okay is the key word. Like,
and okay. When I say okay, I mean like, is there a 9 in front of save percentage? And is there a 2 in front of goals against?
And even then, like,
big asterisk. And it's a race. Yeah. And it's like a big asterisk. And even then, it doesn't even have to be good. But then we're like, oh, well, okay. So it's like the you know, the net that's cast when it comes to scouting goalies is so wide that we can't, like, we're not gonna if you're looking for specifics, unfortunately we're not gonna be able to give them this episode or ever, because it just doesn't, it's really crazy how it works. But looking like a goalie and gets your foot in the door, and so many people will be like, how is this person committing? They're not good. Or how are they getting offered? It's just because they look like a goalie. Ultimately, over time, if you are better, you are going to continue to advance. I think, like, Derek talked about that he was on the pod. He talked about myself versus some of my other goalie partners I trained with, where I didn't like have that natural, like, smooth goalie ability where other goalies did, but my ability to stop the puck was just generally pretty good. And so over time and through a lot of adversity, I was able to progress. But that foot in the door is super important. Do you have anything else to add to that? Or, because I want to start to talk about like the U12, 13, the young kids.
No, I got one more thing to kind of say about the looks behind it. But for everyone listening and watching who has seen the movie, like has seen Moneyball, the movie, where there's this scene in the scouting room, like early in the movie, where, you know, the old time scouts are like, good body, lots of confidence. That is exactly what still happens with goalies and to some degree players. Like, that is not gone in hockey at all. Right. And it's especially pertinent to goaltending when people aren't familiar with the intricacies that go into goaltending and what actually leads to successful goaltending. Right.
I can't even begin to explain how many times I've been in a room with many coaches from many levels. And the first thing they say is, I'm not a goalie guy, but I like this goalie.
Yeah. I'm not a goalie guy, but that is the number one. I don't know goaltending, but. That is the number one.
Can you tell me what you think? But I really like this guy. I'm not a goalie guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so a part of that is, again, it's going to be a few things. It's going to be, this is the dumbest thing ever, but it's so true. It's, how do you butterfly? I cannot tell you, like, when someone butterflies, I know Jamie's cringing and laughing, but we've had these conversations where, like, you'll hear a scout or a coach be like, they just snap into that butterfly, which is true. Goalies most often do snap into the butterfly. I would say almost all goalies do.
Are you, like, if you're going down one leg at a time, yeah, you're probably...
But it's, and again, the other thing that people love to be assessed with, I kind of said it before, but is the idea of like a calm goalie. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like plays like Price is, again, like I said that earlier, but that's the number one thing I hear. Normally, goalies who look like Carey Price and are not first round NHL draft picks probably don't do anything like Carey Price.
Yeah.
I find that's normally an expression that's used to describe a goalie who doesn't move very quickly.
Yeah. I know it's so nuanced. Like, it's just scouting goalies is just, I don't know how anything ever happens. It's just a lot of taking chances.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Yeah.
When you were talking in our group chat, we talked about the average, but of all the goalies that get drafted in the OHL, the average number of games played was 2.
Yeah. It might actually be like, and the median games is 0. So like, right, like getting drafted in the OHL, don't be wrong, it is a great path for lots of people. Mm-hmm. Whether you go on to play a long
professional career. Yeah, yeah.
whether you go on to play a lengthy professional career, or you play your years out and you go and play in U sport or Canadian University hockey, whatever that looks like. But admittedly, most goalies who get drafted into the CHL don't play in the CHL. Right. And also there's always exceptions. Like in examples, like Alex Nedeljkovic, who was a 6th round OHL draft pick. If you're not drafted in the first 4 rounds of a CHL draft, the exception again being the WHL because they draft so early and that's a bit of a mess. But if you're not in the first 4 rounds of the OHL or the QMJHL draft, like your odds of playing significant games in that league is so low, like so low. And there's exceptions. Yeah. So no one get mad at me with your favorite exception. But again, it's, yeah, you're taking chances and et cetera, et cetera. So don't be so obsessed with that process. You don't need to be.
So before we go in there, I just want to give people who are listening, we were talking about, you know, do they look like a goalie or so, and, you know, what are scouts looking for? So I will give you my scouting formula, and this is it. So often I get a lot of highlight reel clips. I don't want those. Don't send me highlight reels.
Nope.
When someone sends me a goalie and they say, take a look, usually it's just like a surface level glance and I'll be like, but it doesn't really tell me anything. I like to see 10 games. I usually use Instat. If Instat, if you're listening, give us a sponsor, please. But I use Instat. And what I do is I take 10 games. I also want to see their worst game, their best game. And then I pick 8 games at random in between. And I look at how do they look in their worst game? How do they look in their best game? How do they look at all the games in between? And for me, I'm looking at consistency throughout. I'm looking at the worst game looks identical or similar to their best game and vice versa. And everything looks similar. And then I can kind of make my evaluation based on consistency over a period of time. So for me, I'm looking at who is going to be the most consistent, who's going to give us a chance to win every night. I've kind of come up with this formula in my brain where it's like, if you can basically getting pulled once out of every 10 games is probably a realistic thing in like junior hockey.
Yeah,
getting a shutout, getting a shutout at least once every 10 games is probably what you're looking at. So I want to see the best and the worst. What is all the other games in between like? Because that is the bulk of what's happening. Because like, I'll get someone will send me a shutout game, and I'm like, that doesn't help me. Like, I want to see what kind of goals are you giving up. Like, I want to see that. So that's my scouting process, is evaluate 10 games. I very rarely make calls. I don't think I ever really make calls unless someone is very obviously like, this guy is or girl is a very good skater. I'm going to watch more of them. Or technically, they are not proficient. I'm going to watch a little bit, but they're not high on my list right now. And that's my scouting structure, is 10 games. What are you doing over 10 games?
Yeah. And again, that's like a pretty reasonable sample size. Mm-hmm. I've talked about that number being probably the bare minimum to have an understanding of how they're going to play different situations.
Yeah. And in reality is like, when you look at college hockey, we start to look at goalies, and this is going to tie into like our age. We start to look at goalies probably when they're 16, 17 ish. And it's not scouting hardcore. It's like, are they playing on high level? Are they doing okay? Are they tall? Are they athletic? And you don't even have to check all those boxes. You just have to check one of those. And then your name just basically gets just thrown on this big Excel sheet. And then we watch what you do until you're 21.
Yep.
And it's like, do we need a goalie next year? Okay. Then let's, when do we need a goalie? Do we need a goalie in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? And that kind of gives a timeline. Who's the best goalie if they're going to be 3 years and more in junior, 3 years playing in junior, okay, then we need someone who's got 3 years. And because we need them in 3 years, let's find someone, let's have them develop. And that's usually where we pick. And it's just a long list. And sometimes someone commits and we just cut them off the list and someone else grabbed them first. They saw them, they liked it. Okay, what are we then? Who's next? And eventually, if someone's doing really well and we're like, okay, like we should get them now because we like them, they're on our list, and we don't want anyone else to take them, give them an offer. And that's just how like it works for most like college teams and scouting.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like put a big caveat here as well that this is for teams that are traditionally outside of like the big top 10 teams.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier when you're Boston College. You just call the NTDP and you say, hey, which one of them wants to come to our school? Which one of your NTDB goalies would like to play at Boston College? Yeah, that's what BC does, right?
If you're in Michigan, you just go, which one of you 16-year-olds wants to commit?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Which one of you is prepared? Yeah. Are you in the U-17? Oh, you're a U-17 NTDB.
Are you at the program? Okay.
Yeah,
you're in.
Okay. Yeah. And again, that's just the reality of it, right? So this conversation around kind of truthfully grinding it out in junior a little bit more is for, and that's where, you know, these more middle of the pack, smaller schools, you know, the Michigan Techs, the Bowling Greens, I'm going to put that in the same loop just to make you upset. The Northern Michigans have to kind of have to look at things a little bit different on a longer scale approach, right?
Yeah.
So again, this conversation is for people who the reality is, again, especially as a goalie, if you're not a really high CHL draft pick, if you're in Canada, if you're not someone who's being invited to USA national camp as a, you know, 15, 16 year old, the reality is you're probably going to have to grind it out in junior a little bit, right? That might be playing until you're 20, might be even playing.
And
until
that's 21. Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with that. If this is something that you're really serious for, the reality is there's still that belief that goaltenders take longer to develop. So people are less likely to give young goalies a chance. There's still the belief, even in the junior, especially the junior level, where, you know, a young goalie can't take you to win a championship at the junior level. And we've talked about this before, but junior A, junior B, even junior C teams, right? Their job is to try to win, right? They're trying to win. They're not, the focus point is not development. The focal point is winning. Development happens along the ride.
The way,
Yeah. Right.
Development's more of a, like a college and pro kind of vision.
Yeah, I mean, again, and this is one of my biggest gripes, right? If your focus is on development, you're trying to get your players better, you will be a better team at the end of the year in junior, right? I think that's, or you can just get all your OHL dropdowns and be the best junior A team in the world, or WHL dropdowns, and then So there's different ways to go about it, but the point being that the scouting process is longer, and like we said before, you might get randomly seen by an assistant coach who works with the forwards for the college, or, you know, the GM of a junior team who doesn't know anything about goaltending, but, you know, likes what they may see visually. They're not analyzing things the same way that a goalie person would, right? Jamie, you said you're looking to see someone's skating ability, right? One of the biggest things I look at, so again, from my perspective to evaluating goalies on a scouting perspective, it's like, okay, where it's their positioning. Look, like, where are they standing and how are they adjusting positioning? Mm-hmm. Right. I think to a certain degree, junior age goalies can get better at their skating. I think, you know, at 16, 17, 18, you have a pretty good idea of how they're going to skate moving forward. You're not going to suddenly become an ultra explosive goalie at 19. That's been probably pretty predetermined by your previous work, but you can change how you play positionally. You can improve your ability to scan the ice and read. So I like to see where the kind of their baseline is for that. And then skating obviously is a big thing. And then also the thing that I'm most interested in is how are they tracking pucks, right? It's real hard to teach puck tracking. Dare I say near impossible.
Yeah. You can work on it and improve it. Tracking is one of those things that some people are just going to be better at than others, but you can improve it to a degree. Sure. And then for me it's like the goalie IQ, your play reading, situational awareness. I just lump that under goalie IQ in terms of, do you understand what's going on? That for me is probably the most important, because could probably make someone a little bit better of a tracker, a little bit better of a skater. Making someone smarter and understanding the game takes a long time. It's not impossible, but it takes a lot of effort, and it is a huge investment in time. And so, like, if you need someone to step in and play next year, and they don't get how the game works, or their reads aren't good, or they don't understand how their abilities play within a system, or how to maximize their, whether they're not a great skater, okay, how's their depth and all those things. It's like, okay, do I want to invest all this time in this goalie, or is there someone else who's, you know, maybe not strong at something, but is able to do it? And that's ultimately what it comes down to. But you had mentioned that oftentimes it might be the assistant coach or someone that catches you. And so this is going to carry us into like scouting, and I'm saying this in quotation marks, scouting at like young age. Like we're talking you 16 to 15 down. If AAA teams are not scouting, like they're not scouting, how it works is, it's like it's the tryouts. So let's just say like the tryout period aside, when you have those 30 goalies come out and you get like five shots and it's whittled down. Yeah. Most of the time it comes from just like watching, and there's a weird amount of movement when it comes to minor hockey, but it just comes from watching your opponents. It's playing against another team. You play against the Toronto Junior Canadians or whatever, and you're like, hey, their goalie is really good. And then you find at the end of the year that their goalie wants to go to a different organization. You're like, oh, he was really good against us. That's how it works.
Yep.
100%. Or it's like, hey, there's a goalie out in San Jose who wants to come skate. They're going to send you the video. Okay, well, we're actually looking for a goalie because our goalies weren't great last year. Okay, we think they're better. Let's bring them in. That's it. Like, scouts aren't lining up out the door at AAA levels to do these organizations. It's a lot of word of mouth. It's a lot of just your opponents. Someone might happen to be watching their cousin at a game who coaches, and that's how it works. Junior teams, once you get to that junior eligibility age, which is U16 and up, there will be some junior scouts at different games.
Totally.
But no one is spending time, money, or effort to scout 12-year-olds.
Hey, the BRICS tournament is still a thing, I think.
Yeah, but it's a fun tournament to go to, but it's just a tournament. I think that's where parents are always sometimes get a little preoccupied with who's watching little Johnny or Jane. It's are they playing well? If they play well, then and say you want to move to your opponent, the coach is just gonna be like, oh yeah, they were good against us, or no, they weren't good against us. That's what happened for me when I moved from Weldon to St. Catharines.
Yeah.
Frank was just like, hey, you were good against us last year.
Yeah, I want to comply. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like that's it.
Like I cannot emphasize this enough. Obviously, Jamie and I had different career trajectories. His went a little bit farther than mine. When I played U11, 12, 13, even a U14, I think across all those years, I won 9 games, or like 10 games maybe, across 5 seasons. I played on the worst minor hockey team in the province of Ontario growing up. We could not have been worse.
Shout out the Reps.
Shout out the no longer existing Hamilton Reps/Huskies. Well, I guess the Huskies exist for one more year, and then they're gone. But yeah, there's like, I was on the worst team ever, basically. And none of that mattered because no one was ever going to watch anyway. Like no one cared at all what is going on at 14U. The people you hear, but like I said, you mentioned word of mouth. You will know who the best players at an age group are because they're just on the best team that hasn't lost all year and they have the most points. Like that's really as simple as it becomes. There's no actual scouting. It's like, oh, the Marlies are 44-0. Oh, Honey Baked hasn't lost a game since September. Who's their leading scorer? Oh, cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no scouting. There's a kind of natural migration of the best players at every age group want to go to the best team. So there's no scouting.
The scouting comes from parents talking about their kids and posting on the internet. And I don't know if there's still forums or there are parent run like scouting things that you can actually pay money into to get your kid at a higher level.
Yeah.
And
that
so
used to be a thing. Yeah.
That it still is. And that's where the scouting is. So it's not true scouting. And you know, and I'm for Ben and I and a lot of goalie coaches, I'm going to say the quiet part out loud here is we don't know if your 12-year-old is going to be very good.
No idea.
I don't like, yeah, sometimes there's 12-year-olds that are good when they're 12. I'm like, you're a good 12-year-old. You're probably going to be a good 14-year-old. But a lot can change. A ton can change. And we were talking about this. I wasn't even a goalie though. I was 12.
Yeah.
So like,
it's that's
like
increasingly more rare, but still, yeah, it's a good example. More
rare, but like, there's so many different factors. There could be some kid who is not a goalie, who's going to start being a goalie, and by the time they're 19, they're really good. Yeah. And you don't know, so it's just like, it's very difficult when parents are like, is my son or daughter, are they good? Like, are they good right now, or are they
good for their age? Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they end up getting a boyfriend or girlfriend and they no longer want to play hockey. Maybe they want to play basketball. Maybe they want to do, I don't know.
Yeah. So
I was going to say, anyone that says like, oh yeah, your kid's good, come work with me, I'm going to get them to the next level, should be a red flag. It's usually like, hey, like we're going to skate together and we're going to get better. And hopefully over the next 10 years, you're where you want to be.
Yeah. Like, I think first and foremost, we talk about this in the work, all this science, but the lab that I work in, we always talk about, we do research on talent identification and talent selection, right? So first of all, calling a 12-year-old talented, I mean, sure, but it's probably best not to use that word. And it's probably best not to focus on that, right? Like, oh, your kid's so talented, they're going to make it. Well, no, your kid's just like your
savant.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have the crystal ball. And like, I have this story, from my age growing up, there was two goalies my age growing up who, one of them, Jamie and I trained with actually for a little while. One of them we did not train with at all, both of which were, you know, always talked about as the best goalies at my age group. And they were really great growing up. Awesome. Like, no, like, hands down, whenever I had to play those teams, I was like, dang, that's a good goalie on the other end of the ice. Mm-hmm. One of them did not play a single game of junior hockey. They had some not so fun things happen in their life and they never played a game. That just happened, mm-hmm. right? And firstly, that same person, one of the other people, sort of stopped growing, sort of fell out of caring about hockey, and by 17 played a season of junior C and then quit, right? Like, those were the best goalies in my age group. Yeah. One had awful, like, just awful circumstances happen to them. The other, you know, had bad experiences, didn't quite develop the way they thought, and they're out of hockey, right? That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the biggest point is if you think, you know, it's not the end of the world if you're on a bad team at U13, a bad team at U14. Heck, it's not the end of the world if you're on a bad team at U16 or U18. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much beyond that. So, and again, I'm going to talk more about myself. I didn't play on a winning hockey team, a team that finished over 500 until I was 17 years old. It took me, I made 8-year-old AAA, which is hilarious. 8-year-old AAA is a forward. Way back in the day, it took me 10 competitive seasons to play on a winning team.
And you still ended up playing at a decently high level of hockey.
Yeah, right. Like, and again, do I wish I would have played on better teams? Yes, that probably would have been more fun. Do I remember vividly losing all those games? I do not.
Yeah. To summarize and to come to a conclusion is there for minor hockey, there isn't like true hardcore scouting. There's very little rhyme or reason. Athletic development and talent identification has been works with and has run some of the best in the world is so incredibly hard. And there's no, it's so difficult to identify. Once you get older, it's a lot of people who aren't experts trying their best to make calls and to make decisions based on their body of knowledge. And then once you get to the very high levels, it becomes a long-term development. Do I think this person is going to be good eventually? And we don't know. That's why you see people get drafted and they never go anywhere. And that's why you see people that aren't drafted all of a sudden go somewhere. Because nobody knows. And it's very hard and it's very difficult. And no one has that crystal ball. So if you're a parent listening, relax.
Yep,
you'll be okay. If you're a goalie listening, relax.
Keep working.
Keep trying your best to do the right thing. Keep skating with goalie coaches. Keep training. Keep doing all the things on and off the ice. Have fun. Don't forget to be a kid and enjoy life. But it doesn't really matter what you're doing. It doesn't really matter where you are right now. It's, are you doing the things to get you better tomorrow and the next day and the next day and over 10, 12, 15 years? Have you put in that large body of work? Like, everyone wants to wake up and be in the NHL or be in junior, but it doesn't happen. It's what are you doing for the many, many years leading up to it that makes the difference? And that
ultimately matters in the long run.
Yeah. And I think one like final note that it ties to minor hockey ties to junior. So again, I only can only speak to my own experiences and your own experiences, Jamie. But in minor hockey, no one cares about your goalie stats.
We talked about this in the stats one. We don't know. The stats aren't even correct because the other goalie's parents are taking them and just shot shaving. Or your parents are taking them and adding shots in.
Randomly, right? And the same thing is true in junior hockey, right? The amount of people, Jamie, after that stat, the amount of people who messaged me and were like, the instat says that I had 20 more shots than the actual score counted. And instat's great. They should sponsor us. They're not always right either on their shot count. Like I've tracked games where they were in stats been off by 10 as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? It's all messy, but ultimately, yes, sometimes scouts do care about your junior stats, but again, hopefully this is a big, hopefully people are able to look a little bit beyond that.
Yeah.
There's like a threshold. Like it's going to be hard to get really scouted with the goals against average of 7 and save percentage of 800 or 80%. It's going to be hard to get scouted no matter how good you are with those numbers because you're probably just an abysmal team.
But in the end, does it really matter? Because again, someone walking into this, the coach walks in and they goes, oh, that person looks like a goalie. I'm keeping an eye on him. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, for better or for worse, there's a lot more that goes into it than your U13 stats or your junior B stats or whatever you want to call it.
Correct. All right, Ben. Any other closing thoughts?
Yes. I have one final thing that I always want to say. It's that if you're really worried about how you're being scouted or whether you're being scouted or how your kid's being scouted, one thing that you can always do to improve your odds is subscribe to Jamie Phillips's Patreon. That will help you get seen more. It is scientifically proven. I've run the numbers. If you are a Jamie Phillips Patreon subscriber, you're going in the first round of whatever draft you qualify for.
Yes, absolutely. You will have a 999 save percentage and a 0.01 goals against. These statements have not been approved by the FDA or any governing body. For those that do subscribe to the Patreon or just support us or listen or share, we do, like we always say, we always appreciate it. Thank you very much. If you've never checked us out on YouTube, maybe try this episode. Let us know what you think. I'm going to play around with some editing, making Ben do marginally more work by pressing record on his phone, not just his Zoom, even though I do all the heavy lifting.
Okay.
If you have anything you want us, anything sciencey things you want us to talk about or just goalie in general, let us know. We're always looking for ideas and we'll see everyone next episode.
Jamie, until next time.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.